to the News Magazine on the America Out Loud Network. I'm Alana Friedman, and this is The Friedman Report. The situation in Hong Kong is becoming more critical every day. Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib has created a firestorm because of her outspoken anti-Israel, anti-Semitic behavior. And Lindsey Graham says that the Inspector General's report on the Russia probe will be ugly and damning, and he wants Americans to know about it. This has been an interesting week, my friends, and these are some of the stories that we're going to talk about. Welcome to News Magazine on the America Out Loud Network. I'm Alana Friedman, and this is The Friedman Report. This past weekend, Hong Kong was characterized by hundreds of thousands of umbrellas. The masses of people filled the streets in the pouring rain, from the buildings on one side to the buildings on the other, and as far as the eye could see. It was amazing. We've talked about this before, but this weekend was a demonstration of how much commitment the people of Hong Kong really have. The people of Hong Kong are not giving up, and they're not giving in. They want their freedom, and they are refusing to give in to the demands of Communist China to stand down. Well, the next few weeks are going to be very interesting indeed, because we just don't know what is going to happen next. What we do know, there are things we do know. We know that the people are not giving up. We know that this weekend saw hundreds of thousands of people coming out in the pouring rain to demonstrate that they want their freedom and they're prepared to do whatever it takes to preserve it. You know, oftentimes these kinds of demonstrations are peopled by the young, the teenagers, the young adults. But these crowds this weekend were people of all ages, people from all walks of life. And they came out because all of their lives, they have lived in freedom. But after the turnover of Hong Kong to China by Great Britain in 1997, even though an agreement was signed giving Hong Kong autonomy for the next 50 years, the Chinese have been slowly, slowly chipping away at these freedoms until it reached a tipping point. The people of Hong Kong were unwilling to continue to tolerate the breaking of the commitments that China made to Great Britain and to them. So this weekend saw a kind of culmination of 10 weeks of demonstrations. In one demonstration early on, more than 1 million people turned out into the streets to express their dissatisfaction and frustration with the government that the Communist Chinese put in place in Hong Kong. And now they want all of their freedom. Now, this is an interesting situation because Hong Kong is one of the financial capitals of the world. And if Hong Kong should fall and become a part of Communist China, the chances that Hong Kong, as one of the world's great financial centers, will collapse are very likely. We're seeing several things happening here. The Chinese army is building up massively on the Chinese border with Hong Kong, and this is very worrisome. On the other hand, they have not made any move on Hong Kong yet. The Hong Kong police are being reinforced by Chinese operators who are blending in Hong Kong police uniforms. So it's difficult to know sometimes who the players really are. It's also been suspected that Chinese operatives are also in plain clothes blending in with the demonstrators. And that also presents some difficult issues if they want these peaceful demonstrations to turn violent. But the most amazing thing about these demonstrations is that hundreds of thousands of people turned out into the streets, went to Victoria Park in Hong Kong, in downtown Hong Kong. Victoria Park will hold about 100,000 people, But these were hundreds of thousands of people. In fact, on Sunday, it was estimated that something close to 1.7 million people turned out in the pouring rain to demonstrate for their freedom. And so they filled the streets. The photographs are simply amazing. And yet, these demonstrations have been largely nonviolent. Now, one of the things that happened this week was that there were some counter-demonstrations, some demonstrations in favor of China. And there were some altercations that arose as a result of these demonstrations. But by and large, the vast majority of the people who turned out demonstrated peacefully. They were residents of Hong Kong. They come out and they stand and they chant and sometimes they sing and they carry signs. But they are, by and large, nonviolent. One of the things that I have found very interesting about these demonstrations from the very beginning is that they didn't seem to have any leadership. And yet the demonstrators showed up and the demonstrations took place. And on some occasions, they moved from place to place in order not to have to confront the Hong Kong police. So it would be like a flash mob. And they would show up in one place, and then when they heard that the police were coming, they would all disappear. They'd go in many directions and show up in another place until the police came and so forth. And yet there did not seem to be any leadership. So something very interesting happened this past weekend. Some of the leaders and some of the spokespeople have started to present themselves, no masks, with names, and speaking out against the Chinese taking over, breaking their promises to the people of Hong Kong. People started speaking to the camera and speaking very openly about their concerns, their frustrations, their anger, their hatred for the Chinese communist. They love their freedom and they're ready to fight to protect it. Sometimes it's hard for people like us who live in freedom, who can say just about anything we want and get away with it for the most part. These people in Hong Kong are facing a fearsome enemy in the Chinese communist. And yet they are beginning to come out, show their faces, speak their mind, and risk everything in their fight for freedom for Hong Kong. It's hard for us to understand how much risk these people are taking when they go before the cameras and they express their feelings about communist China. The courage that they are showing is simply amazing because the Chinese are brutal with their critics. And these people are risking everything by speaking their minds to the world. What's going to happen next is pretty much anybody's guess. But President Trump is trying to still these troubled waters. He has asked for a one-on-one meeting with President Xi. And he has asked President Xi to meet face-to-face with the leaders of the Hong Kong demonstrators. If the president is successful in getting Xi to meet with the people of Hong Kong, he says that he believes that this will end peacefully and humanely. I'm not so sure, but he's walking a very delicate, narrow tightrope as he tries to balance trade talks and the situation in Hong Kong. If I were advising the president, I would say to him, Mr. President, this is a time for great courage. The people of Hong Kong are showing enormous courage as they come out and speak out against the loss of faith with China. The people of Hong Kong are fighting for their freedom and for their lives, and they need all the support from the United States that we can muster to give them. We don't want this to be like the Green Revolution in Iran, where Obama kept his counsel, turned his back on them, and refused to even give them the minimum moral support that they were crying for. We don't want to do that again. The people of Hong Kong deserve far better. So, Mr. President, you have already tied the situation in Hong Kong to the trade talks, and that's a good thing. And now what the people of Hong Kong need from you is a statement that supports their right to the freedom and autonomy that was promised to them in 1997 and which they have lived with all of their lives. We are a freedom-loving country, and they deserve our best, our encouragement, our support as they fight this fight against the tyranny of communism. It's important, Mr. President, that they hear your voice and that President Xi hears your voice, that you will not tolerate the loss of freedom for the people of Hong Kong, and that if China should come in with a heavy hand, there will be grave consequences for China as a result. So this is what I would say to President Trump. I believe he has the courage and the fortitude to say what needs to be said right now, to stand up for democracy, to stand up for freedom. The people of Hong Kong want it and need it, and Americans need it too. So now we have to wait and see what the people of Hong Kong will do, what the president will do, and what China will do. So stay tuned. Now I promised to talk to you a little bit about the bombshell that Senator Lindsey Graham dropped on the American people over the weekend. He announced that the Inspector General's report on the Russia probe would be ugly and damning. Those are strong words. He appeared on Sunday Morning Futures, which is a Fox News program with Maria Bartiromo. And he said that not only is the Inspector General's report going to be damning, but he said that he is going to try to release it to the public in its entirety, or as much as he is able to, so that the public, the American public, will be able to understand the depth of depravity that resulted in the Russia probe. And it goes all the way back to the beginning, to the Trump presidential campaign before he was president, when the Department of Justice did whatever was necessary and a lot of things that were illegal in order to spy on the Trump campaign and to bring down the candidate and then later on the president of the United States. Now, the Inspector General of the Justice Department, Michael Horowitz, his report is coming out any day now, as far as we can tell, and it is going to contain a great deal of information about the shenanigans that went on in the Department of Justice and the FBI that led up to the phony Steele dossier and the use of that phony dossier to request the FISA warrants that enabled them to spy on the Trump campaign and later on the Trump White House. This is serious malfeasance on the part of the Department of Justice and the FBI. And this is what Senator Lindsey Graham wants us to know about. So this should be an interesting week, and we will no doubt have a lot to talk about next week. Now, some odds and ends that come under the category, under the heading of "you can't make this stuff up." Here are some quotes from some of our most notorious leaders in Congress. Our old friend, Representative Maxine Waters, had this to say, quote, "The next Supreme Court justice should be an illegal immigrant," unquote. What? Really? Honestly, Maxine, you get worse and worse every day. The full depth of the stupidity of that remark is beyond understanding. The justices on the Supreme Court need to be fully knowledgeable of the Constitution, because every piece of law that they look at has to be weighed against what the Constitution requires of us. So I can't think of anything more stupid or more dividing than that particular idea. Shame on you. And then Chuck Schumer said, quote, "Time and time again, we find progressive laws getting struck down. And it's always, always the ones that the Constitution is against. These right-wing judges don't think for themselves. They just do whatever the Constitution says, and it's time for that to end," unquote. Like I said, you can't make this stuff up. The whole idea that the justices on the Supreme Court base their opinions on what the Constitution says is the law. And the Constitution is the foundation of what our laws are based on. So Chuck Schumer, you need to go back to school. And then Elizabeth Warren, she says, quote, "We need judges to be advocates of progressive laws, not people who will bow down to the whims of the Constitution." God, you can't make this stuff up. "Pitting its extremist values of freedom of speech and freedom of religion against our agenda," unquote. Is she kidding? Her agenda trumps, pardon the pun, her agenda trumps the Constitution? The Constitution, as I said before, is the foundation of our entire legal system. Where did she go to school? And then finally, Cory Booker said, "We're sick and tired of the Constitution sitting in the National Archives, manipulating everything we do," unquote. You know, these guys, they really ought to be retired and put in a summer camp somewhere and let them fight it out with each other. They certainly are not competent to lead our country. I guess I'll leave you with that for this part of the program. We're going to take a short break, but we'll be back. And we're going to talk about what's going on with two of our congresswomen who are trying to change the agenda of our relationship with our friend and ally, Israel. Stay tuned.
Hello, this is Lieutenant Randy Sutton, the host of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. I am a 34-year police veteran. I am also the founder and CEO of an organization that stands behind injured and disabled law enforcement officers. It is called The Wounded Blue. Our website is thewoundedblue.org. We have produced a film. It is an important film. I urge you to watch it. The film details what happens when a police officer or law enforcement officer is shot or stabbed or beaten or disabled, seriously injured in the line of duty. Most people think they are taken care of medically and financially. The reality may be quite different. It is called The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. The film is available on Amazon, iTunes, and the Microsoft Store.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
There are so many stories out there, it's hard to know where to begin to talk to you about what's going on in the world. But I want to talk to you now about a story that is deeply troubling for many reasons. It begins with two of our congresswomen. They are Muslim women, one from Michigan and one from Minnesota. And they have decided to make a major project out of damning Israel and creating a huge firestorm over a trip to Israel that they probably never intended to make. This week, they held a press conference, and it was all about this. At the beginning of the summer, it was announced that a group of congressmen, freshman congressmen, would be taking a trip to Israel in August, and that they would have an opportunity to see for themselves and understand why Israel is such a strong ally of the United States. Notably absent from the list of Congress people who were going to be taking this trip were three of the four so-called squad members: Ilhan Omar from Minnesota, Rashida Tlaib from Michigan, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez from New York. All Democrats, all determined to grab the spotlight whenever possible and keep it for as long as possible. They didn't come to Congress to learn. They came to agitate, to promote their agendas. In Ocasio-Cortez's situation, she wanted to promote her so-called Green New Deal. And this was a way for her to grab the microphone, to grab the camera, and to become a celebrity in her own right. The other two, Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar, had a different agenda. Their agenda was what they call Palestine. Now, we'll talk about that in a minute, why I say so-called Palestine. But from the outset, I want to say something else. They planned a kind of demonstration that would grab headlines and grab attention, and hopefully they thought would grab sympathy for their agenda. And here's how it goes. At the beginning of the summer, this trip was announced that a group of freshman congressmen would take a 6-day trip to Israel. It was led by Congressman Steny Hoyer, who has been leading these trips for quite a long time now. Their agenda would be to meet senior people, not only of the Israeli government, but also of the Palestinian government on the West Bank. That was part of the agenda. And as it turned out, 71 freshman congressmen, Republicans and Democrats, took this trip. But as I said, Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib did not participate in this trip. Instead, they decided to take their own trip. And their own trip was going to be not to Israel. In fact, they made it quite clear from their announcement. They were going to Palestine, to the fictional country of Palestine. We'll get into that in a little bit also. So here they are, and they're planning their trip to Palestine. So who is making their itinerary? Well, there's an organization called MIFTA. It's headed by a woman named Hanan Ashrawi. Now, Hanan Ashrawi has a long history of supporting terrorism against Israel. She was, in fact, the spokeswoman for Yasser Arafat, the arch-terrorist who became the leader of the PLO and the Fatah movement on the West Bank. And she has continued to support terrorism against Israel and Israelis. Now, terrorism means bombs, knives, car rammings, anything that will kill Israelis. This is the woman who was planning their itinerary. Now, there's another little piece to this story, which is that Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib have been supporting an organization called BDS. It's actually a movement rather than an organization. But BDS is dedicated to destroy Israel economically through boycott, divestment, and sanctions. And they have been working very, very diligently to make sure that this happens. They work through Christian churches, and they work with Muslim organizations in the United States and abroad. So let's take a look at what this trip is about. What is the purpose of this trip? They're supporting BDS, whose goal is the destruction of Israel. Their trip is being planned by a group that supports terrorism, that is anti-Semitic, anti-Israel, and ready to do anything to carry out attacks against Israel, against Israelis, and Jews. Now, these women are complaining because they were barred from going to Israel. That's not so surprising, considering the agenda that they have. What would they have done when they were in Israel? Well, first of all, they would be not seeing anything that relates to Israel as much as it relates to the West Bank. And they would be meeting with people whose hatred for Israel is well documented and well known. So when it came time for them to go, Israel was in a quandary. If they let them in, they were likely to foment some serious anti-Israel agitation. Now, this might just have been making an announcement to the press that would stir up a hornet's nest, as they are well equipped to do. But if they refused to let them in, the PR ramifications could be very serious. And this was something that the Israeli government had to take into account when they made this decision. Senior Israeli officials held a late-night session to discuss this issue. And in the end, they made the tough decision to bar Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib from coming into Israel. Do you know a country, any country in the world, that would welcome people who are bent on the destruction of that country? Do you? I don't. And in fact, in America, we have kept people from coming into our country, including Hanan Ashrawi, whose visa we rejected this year. How responsible would it be to allow someone like that into our country to go anywhere they like without restriction and not demand an itinerary from them and not limit their activities in any way, even though they have made it abundantly clear that their goal is to destroy our country? How responsible would that be? This is what Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib expected, as their due. The fact that they were congresswomen wasn't the point. The fact that they were dedicated to the destruction of Israel, that was the point. And because of that, they were ultimately barred entry. And then something strange happened. Rashida Tlaib made an application to the Interior Minister, Aryeh Deri, requesting admission on humanitarian grounds so that she could see her Siti, her grandmother, who was in her 90s, and who lives in an Arab village in the West Bank. In her letter, she said, "This may be the last time I may ever see her." It tore at the heartstrings, as it was intended to do. And the Interior Ministry immediately gave her permission to come to the West Bank and see her Siti. In her own letter, Tlaib said that she would not engage in any BDS activities while she was here. But as soon as she got the permission, guess what she did? She said, "You know what? I'm not going. This is humiliating. This is demoralizing. This is an insult to my grandmother." And so she did not go. It was really very strange. The whole thing was strange. And what it pointed to was the fact that this was all a setup from the beginning. They made such a point of their support for BDS and their connection with Miftah, this pro-terrorism organization in the West Bank, and their antagonism and hatred of Israel before they ever went there, that they made it virtually impossible for Israel to allow them in. Now again, I ask you, what country would allow people who are dedicated to the destruction of that country through terrorism and other means, what country would ever let them in? Now interestingly, as I said before, the woman who was the head of Miftah, Hanan Ashrawi, was earlier this year denied a visa to the United States because of her ties to terrorism. So you see, we have a no-win situation from the beginning. They made it impossible because of their outrageous statements, making very clear their hatred of Israel and their determination to destroy Israel if they can. Not only by BDS, but also through legislation that would deny Israel foreign aid, for example. So they are using all the power of their positions, even as freshman congresswomen, to do everything they can to destroy Israel. And this is what led up to Monday's press conference. It was a show that had drama and tears and anger and frustration and all the emotions that were designed to bring out the pathos of Rashida Tlaib's situation. Ilhan Omar was master of ceremonies, and she speaks articulately. You know, she's really a hateful person, but she, and there's an awful lot of question about her immigration status. She's now a citizen, but it seems as though she was guilty of immigration fraud. Without getting into too many details, she's accused of having married her brother in order to get into the country and so forth. I don't even want to get into that right now, but she's very suspect in many ways. Nevertheless, she's beautiful and she dresses impeccably. Well, you could too if you were earning $175,000 a year. So she was the MC and she introduced Rashida Tlaib, who got in front of the microphone and began to cry about the humiliation that her mother went through when she had to go through Israeli checkpoints. So I want to tell you a little bit about something that bugs the heck out of me. We hear all these stories, and they use the worst terms possible. They use the terms massacre and apartheid and ethnic cleansing and even genocide. And none of them are true. None of it is true. I listen to these complaints, and I've heard them for years. I lived in Israel for 16 years, and I know all these stories. They're all lies, all of them. There's no genocide going on in Israel or in the West Bank. It's not happening. But the words are very effective. We've talked about the effect of language here before, and this is a very good example of how language is misused to misrepresent the reality on the ground. But what I don't get, and what I don't understand why the world doesn't get, Israel doesn't participate in anything like that. But what we have, and what we do have to pay attention to, is the fact that never, ever do the Palestinians take responsibility for their own situation. Why is Israel so protective of its borders that it feels it needs to screen members of the Muslim community who come into the country? And I'll tell you why. The West Bank was acquired by Israel as an outcome of a defensive war. It was the Six-Day War, when Israel was simultaneously attacked from the south by Egypt, from the north by Syria, and from the east by Jordan. And it was from Jordan that Israel acquired the West Bank. Now, what happened? You know, at the beginning, after things returned to something approaching normal, there was a more or less friendly relationship between the Israelis and the Arabs of the West Bank. Jews could travel anywhere, and so could the Arabs. Arabs come and they did commerce and they worked in some of the factories, and the Israeli Jews could drive anywhere in the country and feel relatively safe. And this went on for many years. And then the First Intifada. And when that happened, all of a sudden, the situation changed dramatically. It was much more difficult for a Jew to drive around the country, to drive through Arab villages and feel safe. And it was difficult for Arabs who wanted to travel from the West Bank to Jerusalem, for example, or to places inside the pre-1967 borders. And so they had to go through checkpoints, and the checkpoints became more and more rigid. Now, I want to point out that there is a cause and effect here. This didn't happen as long as there was relative peace between the Arabs and the Jews. But once the terrorist attacks became systematized in the Intifada, everything changed. What the Palestinians are not willing to admit is that there was this cause and effect. As far as they are concerned, they're the victims. And the fault is all on the part of the Israelis. When Rashida Tlaib got up in front of the mic and she cried, I have no reason to believe that those tears were not real. But you know what? I don't feel so sorry for her. It's a terrible situation, don't get me wrong. That people have to go through this is terrible. But there is accountability here. And if the Palestinians, as they call themselves now, are going to send terrorists into the Israeli cities and towns and murder Jews, then they have to expect that there are going to be consequences. And these are the consequences. So I don't feel sorry for Rashida Tlaib because she refuses to take responsibility. Where are her tears for the thousands of Jewish Israelis who have been killed by terrorist bombs planted by her fellow Palestinians? Where are her tears for the Jewish families who lost children, who lost fathers and mothers and sisters and brothers, who were slaughtered in their bed or blown up in a bus or run down by a terrorist in a car who rammed them to death or who stabbed them to death on a street corner? Where are her tears for them? This is what we're up against now. Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar are marshaling the troops in an effort to destroy Israel and claim all of what is now Israel for what they call Palestine. And before I leave the subject, let me just tell you that Palestine is not a country. It's a fiction. There has never been a country called Palestine. There was the Roman colony of Palestina, and there was the British Mandate of Palestine, but those were colonies of other countries. The country that did exist was the Kingdom of Judea. It was a Jewish country, and it was thousands of years ago, and it lasted for more than 200 years. The Jews of Israel have come home, and it's time they were allowed to live in peace. Okay, we're going to take a short break now, but don't go away. We'll be right back. And we'll talk a little bit about what life would be like under the Democrats' version of socialism.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
As we say, let the silent voices be heard. Shadow banning, editing, censorship, blocking, and adherence to political correctness are seen as serious threats to our God-given right to free speech. Suppressing free speech, the very cornerstone of our society, is not in the best interest of our listeners, readers, and those who provide our content. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
The Democrats are all promoting one brand or another of socialism. And they're fighting with each other to see who can push the envelope further to the left. I don't see that anybody is winning, but that's what they're doing. It's actually funny, or it would be if it weren't so serious. The people who are fighting the hardest are all trying to be president of the United States. And that's no joke. So here we are trying to sort out who's who and which candidate might actually be the best of the lot. Well, I personally don't think any of them can hold a candle to the current president, but that's just my personal opinion. In the meantime, it might be fun to consider what it would be like living under the Democrats' version of socialism in this country. And we have only to look at California and New York City and Chicago and Portland, Oregon, to see what it would be like, because it's already there. California's the best example. It's just awesome. It's just there's so much there to work with. Well, you start off with, let's see, what do we say? Oh, California has a huge budget as well as a huge debt. And they've managed to screw everything up pretty well. They're spending all their money in the wrong places. And the people of California love it. They want more. It's unbelievable. They've got thousands of people living in the streets. And I mean living in the streets, which means they're shooting up, they're defecating, they're fornicating, they're basically living in squalor and filth on the sidewalks of what was once the beautiful city of Los Angeles. It's also true in San Francisco and in other cities around California. So California has this need to be better than thou. In other words, they want to be better than anyone else. And they think they're better than anyone else. But you sure couldn't tell that by walking down the streets of downtown LA. Think about this. More than 36,000 people are homeless in the city of Los Angeles. 36,300, to be a little more precise. The government is actually saying to the people of California, we're going to give sanctuary to people who have gotten into this country illegally, and you, citizens of California, you are going to pay for it with your taxes. Is that okay? Sure. So that even when they commit violent crimes, we're going to protect them. And we're going to put them back out on the streets and you just have to watch your back. And then to the people who are living in squalor on the sidewalks of downtown Los Angeles, they say, oh, you can stay there. It's okay. We won't bother you. We're going to spend millions and millions of dollars getting you out of there every once in a while and washing down the streets, get rid of the filth and the rats and the feces and the hypodermic needles that you're living among. Oh, and by the way, if you are feeling sick and you have something that seems like the plague, oh, well, don't worry. Just suck it up. We're not going to help you. We're not going to build shelters for you, heaven forfend. We're not going to help you find a place to live. Goodness. What we'll do is we'll wash the streets periodically. We'll spend money on making it look prettier. Maybe we'll put flowers up in the baskets. But we're not going to really help you. You're on your own. Oh, I know what we'll do. We can reserve parking lots for you. And then you can live in your cars. That's a good idea. This is California, guys. Well, they're taxing the heck out of everybody in California who is not homeless or illegal. You know, I'm making a joke, but this isn't funny. This is pathetic. And the most pathetic part of it is that the people of California are becoming more and more accepting of socialism, and they're going to vote these people back into office. It's crazy. This isn't America. This is not what America is supposed to be like. We are supposed to take care of each other. But we're supposed to do it in a way that's dignified, that gives dignity to the people we're trying to help. That's not what's happening in California. And it's sad. It's very sad. Now, in New York, they're talking about implementing the Green New Deal. That's Mayor de Blasio, who is now also running for president of the United States. Now, initially, he was on the bandwagon for getting Amazon to come to New York and create 25,000 jobs with an average salary of $150,000 a year. That was amazing. But then Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez showed up and decided, we're too good for Amazon. They're corporate thieves. They're corporate criminals. And we don't want them in our city. So they can take their billions of dollars, and they can take their 25,000 jobs with an average salary of $150,000 a year. And even though they are offering to make our city a better place, we don't want them here. So at the end of the day, Amazon didn't come. They pulled out. And Mayor de Blasio is now on her bandwagon. And he wants to figure out how he can implement the Green New Deal and make New York greener and less of a producer of carbon pollution. So what does he want to do? He wants to retrofit all of the glass and steel skyscrapers by covering up all that glass and steel so that they are no longer the gorgeous skyline that attracts visitors from all over the world to spend their tourist dollars in the great city of New York. But the city of New York will be a lot greener. And you know what that's going to cost? Oh, wait for it. It's going to cost $100 trillion. That's what he said. But he's okay with that. He's just going to tax people. Tax them more. It's crazy. So what do you think it's going to be like living under socialism? Well, the candidates say they're going to raise taxes on the middle class. And they're going to tax the rich to death. They're going to give everything to everybody. But they're going to give more to the illegal immigrants, who will have sanctuary that will protect them from the law in ways that legal residents, citizens of the United States, don't have. They're going to give us all free stuff. Yeah. Free health care. Our kids are going to get free college. Oh, and all of the student loans that haven't yet been paid off will be paid off. How do you think that's going to make the guys who really worked like anything to pay off their loans so that they could get on with their lives? They've done it. And now all these guys, all the rest of them who haven't paid it off, those debts are going to be forgiven. That's fair. No, it's not. Socialism. It doesn't have to be fair. It just has to make the people at the top feel good. And the rest of us, well, too bad. As I said before, suck it up. It means that the government is going to tell us where we can send our kids to school. They want to cancel out charter schools. They're not doing anything much except giving disadvantaged kids extraordinary educations so that they can lift themselves out of the squalor that they were born into. And then we're going to force everybody to go to specific schools, public schools, government schools, and they're going to teach our kids all about things we don't believe in and things we would never teach them at home and don't want them to learn at school, such as sexual identity, identity politics, homosexuality, masturbation, and alternative sexuality choices, whether they're a boy or a girl or something else entirely. From kindergarten up, you know, I've seen some of these lesson plans. They're horrific. They're gross. They're disgusting. You don't teach little children stuff like this. I don't want them teaching my kids about this stuff. But what do I know? I'm a conservative. I'm not going to have a choice, and neither will you. Because that is part of what living under socialism is going to mean in the United States of America in the 21st century. Are you okay with that? I know I'm not. Okay, so anyway, under socialism, you're just simply not going to have a choice. You know, there was a situation in Lexington, Massachusetts, a number of years ago, and a father objected to having his child, who was in kindergarten or first grade, subjected to a book that was being read to them. It's called something like I Have Two Mummies. He didn't like that because he was a conservative Christian, and he believed that same-sex marriages or same-sex unions were not according to God's law. He didn't want his child learning this in school, particularly at such a young age, at any age, but particularly at such a young age. And you know what the school did? They forbade him to come to the school, not even for parent-teachers meetings. It was horrible. Now, had I been he, I would have pulled my kid out of that school in no time. But it may have been the kind of family where both husband and wife were working, and they couldn't afford to do that. Lexington is a fairly wealthy community, so it's hard to imagine how that might have been the case, but you never know. So anyway, he couldn't see his child in a school play or go to a parent-teacher's meeting. And this is the way the school treated him. And that is what we have to look forward to under a socialist government. The government is going to decide how we live. They're going to decide what we can eat, what kind of jobs we can have, what schools we can go to, and what we have to learn in those schools. And you know what? America, as we know it, will be gone. Forever. Have you any idea what we can do not to have that happen? What is going to have to happen so that that doesn't happen? And it's a good question. Washington, my friends, has become a cesspool. The amount of corruption in Washington has reached such a level that there was actually a government inside the government. We call it the deep state. And that deep state, which pervaded the upper levels of the Department of Justice, the FBI, the State Department, and even the White House. And that deep state was intent on overthrowing, by hook or by crook, by any means necessary, the duly elected President of the United States. They failed. And thank God for that. So here's a question for you. As you look back on maybe the history of the last 50 or 100 years, when did we become so broken that socialism even became an option for us? Socialism is the antithesis, the opposite of what America is supposed to be. America is supposed to be ruled by the people. Abraham Lincoln said it beautifully, by the people, for the people, and of the people. And that is what we are supposed to be. It is not supposed to be a government in Washington that controls everything we do. You know, the Constitution has a set of amendments. The Founding Fathers argued whether it was necessary. Can you imagine if we didn't have them? Where we would be now? Those amendments guide us and help us to regulate ourselves by setting down guidelines that we can follow. You know what I find ironic? That all of the top candidates in the Democrat Party who are promoting a socialist agenda and fighting with each other to see which of them can be the strongest proponent of socialism. They're all millionaires. I don't get it. But God help us all if any one of them wins the election. You know, it's so easy for people who live luxurious lives, who can afford just about anything they want, who can do what they want, travel where they want, and still earning great salaries at the taxpayers' expense. It amuses me that, well, it angers me in a way and amuses me in another way, that these are the same people who are telling us that we need to suck it up and we need to listen to them when they tell us how we should live. That's baloney. I don't accept that, do you? These are not people who should be running our lives. They can barely run their own lives. We hear the tripe that comes out of the mouths of people who want to run our lives, who think they can run our lives better than we can. And they're telling us that socialism is the way to go because they know better than we know what's good for us. But here's the thing. They don't know. They never knew, and they never will know. And it's up to us to make sure that they never achieve the goal that they have set for themselves. We were never meant to be a socialist country. We were the great experiment where the government is beholden to the people it governs, the people who elected them to office. And it is the people whose will molds the future of this country. We have failed the founding fathers. We have had 2 years where Congress has done almost nothing. It is the president who has gotten so much done in spite of the Congress. And that is something that we have to address during the next 4 years. He's made a good start, but we cannot have another 4 years of a no-action Congress. My friends, we are at a crossroads, and the choice is clear. So as we move forward and the elections draw nearer, God bless America. Well, that's our show for today. Thank you for spending time with me. I look forward to these shows every week and being able to talk to you. If you have a comment, if you agree with me, or if you disagree with me, that's fine too. Send me an email. Send it to Ilana, that's I-L-A-N-A, Ilana at AmericaOutloud.com. I'll get it, and I'll answer it. I'd love to hear from you. And in the meantime, have a wonderful week, and I hope I'll see you here again next week. You've been listening to News Magazine on the America Out Loud Network. I'm Ilana Friedman, and this has been The Friedman Report. God bless.